Bonjour and welcome to the Good Life France podcast. I'm your host, Janine Marsh. I'm a British writer and I'm the editor of the Good Life France magazine and website. My home is in the far north of France, Pas-de-Calais, and I live in an old farmhouse which I've been renovating for 20 years. When I'm not writing, renovating, or looking after my 52 animals, I've got 4 dogs, 7 cats, chickens, ducks and geese, I travel year-round exploring French destinations, history, culture, art, gastronomy and loads more. And I just love to share my discoveries with you alongside my podcast partner, Olivier Geoffrey.
Indeed. Bonjour, mes amis. Hello from Lyon, where I am based, the sunny bit of France in the south. When I'm not chatting to you here on the podcast, I play with my radio Paris Chanson. I do voiceovers and I'm also a radio presenter. My British accent, acquired after 20 years of living in the UK, is almost perfect. That's us. Now, let's get going on today's topic. Janine, tell us, what are we going to explore today, please?
Well, today we're going to discover the fascinating history of a global icon, a woman with an enigmatic smile. She has been celebrated in songs, poetry, and pop art. She is mysterious. Some say she is a siren who casts a spell on those who look at her. She does not move. She does not speak. She is, in fact, a painting. I am talking about the Mona Lisa.
Ah, yes, she's a very famous lady indeed. Let's dive into the world of the Mona Lisa, a masterpiece that has captivated audiences for centuries. Join us as we explore the creation of the painting, its journey through history, and why it remains one of the most famous paintings in the world. The Good Life France podcast. Everything you want to know about France and more. With Janine Marsh and Olivier Geoffrey. In France, the Mona Lisa is known as La Joconde. She has one of the most famous faces the world has ever known, despite being more than 500 years old. Her likeness hangs in the Louvre Museum in Paris, and each year millions queue to see her face behind its thick bulletproof glass.
I saw the Mona Lisa when I was a teenager, and like you say, she is behind thick glass. And in those days, the glass, it was quite a long time ago, the glass was sort of green-coloured, which really kind of spoiled the whole experience. But now there is a much better glass screen, it's more clear. And the glass helps to conserve the painting, it controls humidity and temperature, but she's also been a bit of a target over the years. And the glass was added in 1956 when someone threw a rock at the painting and damaged Mona Lisa's elbow. And since then, she's had several things thrown at her, including cake, acid, and a teacup, which is a bit random. Luckily, she is a survivor. And I have to say, I was actually quite surprised at how small the painting is. It's a half-length portrait, but it's so famous, arguably the most famous painting in the world, that I sort of expected it to be larger than life. So in this episode, we're going to find out, who was Lisa? Who created her? And why is she so famous? And it's not just about the extraordinary quality of the painting and who painted her. It's also about the history of the painting. And more than anything, that brings it to life for me.
She might be one of the most famous faces in the world, but strangely, there's lots we don't know at all about the painting. We don't know exactly when she was painted, and we don't know that much about the real woman at all beyond her name.
The Mona Lisa was created by Italian artist Leonardo da Vinci, one of the most brilliant minds of the Renaissance. He began the painting in Italy. It's thought around 1503, but no one absolutely knows. And he finished it in France when he was invited to live there in 1516 under the patronage of French King Francis I, who offered him the gorgeous little Chateau de Clos-Lucé in Amboise as his home. And that was just down the road from the king's castle, which is much bigger. Actually, there was an underground passage linking the two castles, and it said that the two of them would scurry along the passage and meet in private. I love that idea. Leonardo, who was by no means wealthy, in fact, he was pretty much broke at the time, was thrilled to go to France. We'll do a whole episode about this incredible man another time and his life in France, by the way, because there's a lot to say about him. He actually travelled to Amboise by donkey across the snowy Alps, taking the Mona Lisa painting with him. And it's believed by historians that when he arrived, he continued to work on his masterpiece. And though it's said that he never considered it finished himself when he died in 1519, but, you know, most people feel couldn't really have gone much further with it.
The Mona Lisa, that's what English speakers call her. Well, her real name is Lisa Gherardini, Why Mona Lisa? It's a name that was started in the 1800s, and Mona is an Italian form of a dress, almost like a mistress, you know, or Mrs. It comes from Madonna, my lady. Mrs. Lisa really doesn't sound the same, does it?
Mrs. Lisa. Oh, can you imagine that? The painting on the wall and the little plaque next to it saying, name of painting, Mrs. Lisa. No, not going to happen.
Yeah. Have you seen Mrs. Lisa at the Louvre? No. So what do we know about her? She was the wife of a wealthy Florentine silk merchant named Francesco del Giocondo, hence the title, La Gioconda, in Italian, La Joconde, spelled J-O-C-O-N-D-E in French. La Gioconda might also be a play on words. Giocondo is like jovial, happy, playful. And she does have that playful smile indeed. 16th century artist Giorgio Vasari described this now iconic expression, stating the smile was so pleasing that it seemed divine rather than human.
Now, although no one can be 100% sure, it's believed that her husband, whom she married age 15, commissioned the painting to celebrate the birth of their second son. She was thought to be around 24 years old at the time.
More than that, not much is known at all. There are theories, guesses, and though historians are fairly certain that they have some of the facts right, no one knows for absolutely sure. There are also some random claims that Leonardo was in love with her, or she was with him, and that's why she's smiling. But there's no proof whatsoever. Fake news, most likely.
Fake news, I love that. Medieval fake news. Many who see the Mona Lisa feel head over heels for her, and they have done for centuries. Even in Leonardo da Vinci's lifetime, she was admired, and other artists were inspired by the painting. They copied it, they imitated it. King Francis I bought the painting in 1518, the year before Leonardo died, and he absolutely adored it. He had it in his castle, and then he took it to another one of his chateaus, Fontainebleau, the big, beautiful castle near Paris, where he hung it in his bathroom, which seems a bit strange to us. But in those days, bathrooms were thought to be creative spaces. Louis XIV took the painting to Versailles, but his successor, Louis XV, hated it and had it taken away. And then she ended up in a warehouse for a while. Napoleon hung the painting on his bedroom wall at the Tuileries Palace. I like to think of him laying there trying to get to sleep, thinking, who is this woman with the sweet smile?
Maybe he did. It's true, that smile has fascinated people for centuries. In 2000, not long ago, Harvard neuroscientist Dr. Margaret Livingston applied a scientific method to why the Mona Lisa smile seems to shift. And she says, it's all about where you focus and how your brain responds.
But in 1804, the Mona Lisa was placed on a wall in the Louvre, which was a royal palace, but after the French Revolution became a museum. And we'll do a Louvre podcast soon because it's got an amazing story too. But in those days, she didn't get that much attention, but she was still quite popular. And she was seen as a sort of a femme fatale, you know, and rather exotic. And that carried on through the years. Oscar Wilde once said, "The picture becomes more wonderful to us than it really is and reveals to us a secret of which, in truth, it knows nothing." Very mysterious. I have no idea what that means, but it sounds good. It's Oscar Wilde.
Same here. This so soft look, the French writer Alfred Dumesnil wrote in 1854, but a vid like the sea devours.
Easy, tiger. Legend has it that in 1852, the painting drove French artist Luc Maspero to jump out of his hotel window. Wow, that's the effect it had on him. He said, "For years I have grappled desperately with her smile." Wow.
And if you have ever seen the painting in the Louvre, you might well wonder just what is it that makes her so very famous. She with her enigmatic smile, missing eyebrows, showing the special trademark technique that Leonardo used called sfumato. Technically, it means where colors blend in so well, you can't see where they start or end. In the case of the Mona Lisa, this applies to that famous smile. There is a veil of craquelure, tiny edge cracks in the paint that cannot be imitated. But why, out of the artist's many paintings, will this be the one that everyone remembers him for?
Well, I asked a lady called Irina Metzel. She's the communications manager at the Château de Clos-Lugey, which is a fabulous place, by the way. It looks just like it did when Leonardo lived there. And it even has a resident cat called Mignon, who sleeps on his four-poster bed. Anyway, she says that there are a number of reasons why it's so famous. The smile, yes. The mystery of who she was. But most of all, it's because the Mona Lisa was abducted and it had a life-changing effect on her career as a painting.
Absolutely, you're right. That had such a huge impact. In 1911, an Italian workman named Vincenzo Perugia was employed at the Louvre as a glazier. He even helped build the glass from the Mona Lisa was kept in. In those days, there were thousands of Italian immigrants working in Paris. The French called them les macaroni. Well, one night, he spent the whole night hiding in a cupboard. Yes, he did. When everyone had gone home, he slipped the painting out of his frame, hid it under his workman's smock, and in the morning, he simply walked out and took off with it.
It was a complete mystery. There was absolute pandemonium and the news spread like wildfire. I mean, the police had absolutely no idea who'd stolen the painting. They interviewed all the staff. They reenacted the crime. They even used, in those days, a very new technique of dusting for fingerprints. The museum was closed for 9 days. The French border was sealed and ships and trains departing France were searched. Nothing. Amateur detectives got involved. Nutty professors and clairvoyants. When the Louvre reopened after those 9 days, thousands of people lined up to look at the empty space and leave notes, flowers and gifts.
So the empty space became as famous as a painting.
Yeah,
almost
crazy.
And for a while, it was even suspected that an artist named Pablo Picasso, yes, I'm guessing you know him, might be the thief, which, as you can imagine, caused quite a sensation. Apparently, a former worker at the Louvre confessed to stealing other artworks, and he had sold some of them to Picasso, but the police couldn't beat the case, and Picasso went free.
Generous rewards were offered for her return. The police printed 6,500 copies of the Mona Lisa and distributed the paper image to the public. Every newspaper covered the story all around the world. Millions of people saw the painting and everyone had an opinion. The story went completely viral.
I bet. And Perugia kept his head down and he kept the painting hidden in his lodgings in Saint-Germain-des-Prés in a hotel now called, wait for it, the Hotel de Vincini. He actually kept the painting in a cupboard for more than 2 years. Clever man.
Can you imagine him just sitting there knowing this painting is in his cupboard? Everyone's looking for it and he takes it out now and again and he looks at it himself and he's the only one in the world who can see the real thing. It's incredible. But there were loads and loads of rumours about where the Mona Lisa was hidden. Clairvoyants and witnesses claimed that they'd seen her in the Bronx in America in an apartment or in a private collection in St. Petersburg in Russia. Even that the American banker J.P. Morgan had bought her and hidden her in a secret room in his mansion. But no, the whole time it was in Paris. Apparently, Perugia said he thought it should be returned to Italy in revenge for the artworks that the Emperor Napoleon had taken on his campaigns in Europe. But see what you think when we take a look at what he did next.
In late November 1913, he sent a letter to an antique dealer in Florence, Alfredo Gheri, offering to return the Mona Lisa to Italy. He demanded 500,000 lire, the Italian currency at the time. The letter was signed Leonardo Vincenzo with a P.O. box number in the Place de la République in Paris.
So cheeky.
Oh, yes. He took a train to Florence in December with the Mona Lisa in a wooden trunk and checked into a hotel, which is still in business, though now called, what else, the Hotel La Gioconda.
Perugia went on to Uffizi Museum to show the painting and prove it was the real deal. He had it in a box covered up with some old shoes and woolen underclothes. And it said that when he arrived, he had a kind of fixed stare, smiling complacently as if he had painted it himself.
Yeah, I think he must have fallen in love with her.
I think he must have as well. Well, the staff obviously handed him over to the police. He was arrested, of course. And at his trial, he said he didn't actually mean to steal her. He meant to It's incredible. He meant to steal another painting, but he took her because she was smaller. Anyway, he got a year in prison, and he actually became somewhat of a hero in Italy for trying to return her. And amazingly, he moved back to France when he came out of prison and opened a paint store in Haute-Savoie. Mona Lisa went on a triumphal tour of Italy and was then returned to her home on the wall of the Louvre. Apparently, she was such a sensation that it became fashionable for women to dust yellow powder over their faces and necks to look like her golden complexion. In the cabarets of Paris, dancers dressed up like her and did a saucy dance. By the time she got back to Paris, she was, without a doubt, the most famous woman in the world, the first mass art icon.
The story gripped the imagination of millions in the end. She became an international celebrity. Everyone knew who she was. Huge amounts of coverage was generated, you know, newspapers, magazines, postcards, songs even.
And her fame has never really gone away. And Andy Warhol portrayed her in his pop art masterpiece. The wonderful Nat King Cole sang Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. Right, that's it. I'm not doing any more. Anyway, she now lives in the Salle des Etapes, the largest room in the Palace of the Louvre. And she is the only painting on the whole wall. She's visited by about 9, sometimes even 10 million people every year. And did you know that the Mona Lisa gets fan mail?
No.
She has done for years. In fact, in one point in the past, she received such, let's say, ardent love letters that she was even given police protection. At the Louvre, there is a little mailbox where people can post letters to her. Some people leave questions about Leonardo's work. Others ask for life advice. Not sure they're going to get an answer on that one, but some write to Mona Lisa herself declaring their love, and she's even had offers of marriage.
Wow, she must have a TikTok account or Instagram account.
She should.
Yeah, definitely. And also, fun fact, lots of people ask about her eyebrows and eyelashes. She doesn't have any, it seems, in the painting, and it's been a mystery for years. People thought it might be a fashion of the day, but it's now believed that cleaning of the painting and age have caused them to fade. But if you view the painting through an ultra-digital scan, she has eyebrows and eyelashes.
So strange. Do you know Beyoncé and Jay-Z filmed a video
Oh,
at the
yes.
Louvre at feet? Yeah, featuring the Mona Lisa for one of their songs. I mean, I wonder how many people have her in their home, you know, prints of her. My mum used to have a print in our kitchen and she cut it out of a magazine, and I've still got it in my house. I mean, it's so old and it's really faded, but I love it. And I also have a Mona Lisa fan, and on hot days, I flick it open and she keeps my face cool.
You're so posh,
I know, I'm very
Janine.
chic.
And she's on the drinks coasters as well, mouse pads and handbags. 500 years after she was painted, she's still one of the most well-known women in the world, and yet we know so little about her.
How much do you think she's worth?
Oh, I couldn't even guess, Janine, a wild amount of money for sure.
Well, in the 1960s, she went on tour and she was valued for insurance purposes at $100 million. In 2014, she was assessed to be worth, wait for it,
Wow.
$2.5 billion. And now, frankly, she's priceless, isn't she? But if you had to put a price on her, in excess of $3 billion.
Okay, this wasn't the only journey she took either. In the 1930s, officials at the Louvre were preparing contingency plans for evacuating the museum's priceless art in the event of war, of course. And when Germany invaded Belgium and eastern France in 1940, their efforts to create, transport, and hide thousands of artworks became really frantic. Officials and volunteers created up 3,500 works of art in total. They requisitioned every big tract they could find, and it wasn't easy. Some of the paintings were huge, like, you know, the Wedding Feast at Cana by Veronese, which measures 33 feet. One large truck carried the gasoline necessary to fuel the other trucks in the convoy. And between June the 5th and June the 17th, 1940, over 3,000 of these pieces of art arrived at the Locdieu Abbey, deep in the Lot region in southwest France, the perfect hiding place for the treasure.
I was actually there 2 weeks ago and it is really beautiful, but yes, a very secret part of France, perfect place to hide things. I fell absolutely head over heels for this place. Anyway, the abbey is near the town of Villefranche-de-Rouergue, and its origins go back almost 1,000 years when Cistercian monks established it, though over the years it's been quite damaged, rebuilt, and restored many times. Well, these priceless works were taken there, including the Mona Lisa. She made the several hours long trip in her own private car. More than 250 people arrived with the art, brought along to unpack and care for it while it was in hiding. Some of them stayed at the monastery, and others stayed in tiny villages nearby.
Alas, the art stayed only a few months. The multiple springs which supplied the monastery grounds with water also made both the church and the other buildings too damp for the precious paintings. Even though it was the perfect hiding place, no one wanted to risk damage to the art. It was recreated and moved. Mona Lisa found a new hiding place in the nearby city of Montauban when she was hidden in a museum until what was deemed unsafe. And then she went to the Château de Montal near Rocamadour, where she stayed for the rest of the war and returned to Paris in 1945. She's not forgotten in Lockdieu, though. One room of the house is dedicated to her stay. She is undoubtedly the abbey's most famous visitor, after all.
So she's had quite a journey, quite a life. She's incredibly famous. And that is the story of the Mona Lisa. We hope you enjoyed this voyage with us. But for now, it's time for a reader's question.
Got a question about France? Well, ask the experts. We reply to you in each episode. And we do it for free. So, Janine, what do we have this week? We get some great questions on here about all sorts of things. We love to answer them.
So today's question is from Tina Lane in Iowa, USA, and she says, in a recent episode, the question was asked, who do you think is the most Frenchest person? And you said Serge Gainsbourg and Victor Hugo. But who do you think is the most French woman? It's a good question, Ollie, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And I think I already know what you're going to say. So, Ollie, what do you think?
Of course, it's a personal opinion when we answer a question like this. But for me, there is only one, Edith Piaf. Of course, that voice. When she sings, you hear France in music, definitely. And her story is just extraordinary. Abandoned at birth in Paris by a cafe singer mother, taken in by a grandmother and reared in a house of ill repute. She was temporarily blinded by complications of meningitis, but recovered her sight 4 years later. She traveled with her father while he performed as an acrobat. She sang in the streets of Paris for money, and she became a legend, a true legend. Such talent.
I have to say, I think I agree with you on this one, Ollie. When I hear La Vie en Rose or Non, Je ne regrette rien, I get goosebumps, and everywhere you go in France, you still hear her music played. I remember sitting in a little auberge, like a cozy restaurant in the mountains of Champagne, and it was a sunny day, and we sat outside, and there was a big birthday party inside the restaurant, a huge family, very French. Music was playing, everyone was really happy, there was loads of laughter, loud talking, you know, it was a big party. And then someone put on an Edith Piaf record. It was L'Accordéoniste. And everyone just stopped talking. And then people started to sing along. And honestly, it gives me goosebumps even thinking about it. It made my eyes water. It was one of those moments you could see that people still loved her. And it felt so French, you know, amazing.
That's funny because I went to a Bouchon Lyonnais yesterday with my family. And she was there singing for us in the speakers, of course. And she was singing La Foule.
It's France in music. It really is. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
We should do an Edith Piaf podcast, Janine.
We should.
Yeah. Thanks so much for that question, Tina. If any other question for us, feel free to send it to janine@thegoodlifefrance.com or via our podcast newsletter. And if there is a topic you want to know more about, let us know. This is the Good Life France podcast. Oh là là! Le podcast The Good Life France.
Thank you so much, everyone. A huge merci beaucoup to everyone for listening to our podcast from all around the world. And an enormous thank you for sharing the podcast with your friends and family. We're so grateful to you for that.
Yes, we are. You've been listening to Janine March and me, Olivier Geoffrey. You can find me at parischanson.fr.
And you can find me and heaps of information about France, where to visit, culture, history, recipes, everything France at thegoodlifefrance.com, where you can also subscribe to the podcast, my weekly newsletter about France, and our totally brilliant, totally free magazine, which you can read at magazine.thegoodlifefrance.com. But for now, it's au revoir from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Speak to you soon.
The Good Life France podcast. Available on all podcast platforms, on thegoodlifefrance.com and on parischanson.fr. The most beautiful French songs of the 40s, 50s and 60s, only on Paris Chanson. Available on your mobile, smart TV, computer and smart speaker 24/7. Visit parischanson.fr to find out more. That's PARISCHANSON.fr.